Now, I am delighted, absolutely thrilled to welcome to the programme today, or this morning, should I say, Independent Senator Joan Freeman. She founded Pieta House in 2006. She entered the Senate, and she has also founded an organisation to help Irish people abroad who are now suffering from mental issues. Joan, first of all, good morning, and you're very welcome to the programme. Secondly, can I say that to achieve one of these things would have been a brilliant achievement for anybody, but to get all three done in the space of, what, 12 years, it's some achievement.
And well, good morning to you, Tony, too. I don't know what to say to that, to be honest. That's a lovely thing to say. I don't think it's any way remarkable. I've just spoken to a group of women, and all of these successes has been down to the support and carrying of me to this point in my life. I mean, when I think of Pieta House, you know, women who were in very good pensionable jobs left those jobs to join me. They, at one point, we had no money in Pieta. We ran out of money. They gave their own life savings, not knowing whether it was would ever be given back. So this isn't my achievement. It belongs, I'm a representative of a group of women who made it all possible for me.
And Joan, can I just ask you, and I don't want to dwell on Pieta House because I talk regularly to Linda Murray here in Santry from Pieta House, but just why did you found Pieta House? Because you were, let's be honest, you were in a pretty handy number. Life was going good enough for you, and you seemed to have the idyllic setup, if you know what I mean. And then in 2006, bang, Pieta House. Why that, Joan?
Well, it took 3 years before it opened, a lot of research, a lot of soul searching. And it, you know, the obvious answer is that I was affected on a personal level by suicide. Saw that there was a gap in services, and I would have been part of that, you know, pushing people onto a medical type of model, sending them to a GP or a doctor if they were in suicidal crisis. So it just wasn't right. And it wasn't compassionate, and it was lacking total understanding from everyone in Ireland at the time. Nobody spoke about suicide. So it wasn't just about, you know, providing a service free of charge that was compassionate and loving and warm. It was also about changing the social fabric, the way people think and view people who are suicidal.
Joan, can I put it to you that there is a distinct possibility, and it's something that, you know, outside of the work that Pieta House have done, which has been absolutely fabulous, and I mean, I keep making the point that there are a lot of people with us today that wouldn't be with us except for Pieta House. But can I put it to you that just, and again, as I said, I don't want to dwell too much on Pieta House, but the Pieta House model and the way it was set up, that it contributed hugely to a more positive discussion in relation to mental health issues in this country, and that also that it contributed hugely and immensely to removing a lot of the stigma around mental health issues.
Well, there's two answers to that. First of all, it contributed to the conversation. That's absolutely right. It did. And the most important piece of that conversation was to get people to realise that, number one, anyone can die by suicide. It is not about people having long-term mental health issues. And in fact, what we pointed out was that most suicides are a reaction to a life event. That was the most crucial piece of evidence and most crucial piece of information we could have given anybody. And that made people realise, you know, I don't have mental health issues, so, you know, you're not the person isn't labelled and stigmatised immediately. As far as removing the stigma and the label, it's still there. It definitely is still there. There's still another piece of work to be done, especially from an employment point of view. You know, if someone in a lot of companies, if they have mental health issues, they're either ignored or punished, and that definitely has to change. We need an environment where, you know, of a greater understanding of mental health. I mean, the reality is there is no disconnect between physical and mental health. If you're sick, I mean, even if we have flu, our mood can go down. And so therefore, our physical health can impact our mental health. And vice versa. If you have mental health issues, it can physically impact you. You know, and lots of research will say that you can develop diabetes, you can develop low blood pressure, all these different things that can cause physical ailments because of mental health. So we're still struggling with that stigma. We still have to ensure that people realize that one doesn't go without the other, and that it's just part of, and that there may be a stage in everybody's life where they may be depressed. So just to get people to understand that.
And Joan, moving on from that then, I mean, you know, and we'll park Pieta House for the time being, because I really want to devote the bulk of the interview, and I'm so grateful to you for joining me, because I know your time is precious. The Senate, Joan, what made you look at that? Did you look at it to, knowing your background and knowing it certainly wasn't to be in a position of power for the sake of being in power or to enrich or ingratiate yourself, but when you decided or were approached to go into the Senate, what made you decide to give the answer yes?
The only reason I said yes, well, actually there were two only reasons I said yes. Number one was that I would only be an independent. I was not going to be tied with any party. And the second reason I said yes was the way that it was asked by Mr. Martin. He asked me, would I be the voice for mental health? So how could I refuse that?
Yeah, and I can see that, and I knew what the answer was before I asked the question, but I thought it was important that you would stress that to yourself. Do you get, and it's a question I asked your colleague Frances Black at one stage when I interviewed her as well, because she's also on the independent panel, but do you get disillusioned when you see the rounds and rounds of, to a lot of people, what seems to be talking about a problem and discussing a problem, and we'll have a meeting about a meeting in relation to the problem, but a lot of the time maybe no actual concrete work being done?
Absolutely. It is chronically frustrating. But where my frustration lies is not about the meeting or the talkings or anything like that. It's after the meetings and the talkings that nothing happens. And it's only in recent weeks I've come to the realisation that the government isn't in government long enough to make radical changes. So if you think of the present government, we're nearly 2 years old, you know, in May, to a year and three quarters. And you can be sure that there will be another election, certainly not before, probably, unless something drastic happens, not before the next budget. At the very, very best, this time next year, the very best. But it could be any time between now and next year. And I'm sorry, but the politicians here are not looking at the issues that are facing this country at this moment. They're looking to try already to see how they're going to get in next time. And I have a very jaded, cynical view about this, and I hate having that view because I'm usually positive about everything. But the whole system, the whole system of government really needs to be just spoken about. And I mean, if someone comes in and fills a position such as Minister for Mental Health or Minister for whatever, surely they should have the background experience in this area and not make it a geographical choice because it looks good for the party. And I suppose that's my, maybe if you catch me on another day, Donny, when I'm feeling a bit better about politics, I might have a different answer, but that's how I feel at the moment.
Yeah, but I would suggest, Joan, that you're mirroring what a lot of people feel. They have a very jaundiced view of it because, you know, the merry-go-round goes around, and literally all they do is the seeds change, and that's about the height of it. I mean, nothing else changes. The amount of, and you would know this, I would presume, Joan, a lot better than me, but the amount of mental health reports that are sitting gathering dust in the Department of Health must be absolutely unbelievably frustrating for you.
Yeah. There's something like 14,000 reports. I mean, how crazy is that? It's just a magnificent way of kicking the can down the road. That's all it is.
Well, I have alluded to our politicians from time to time, John, that if can kicking was an Olympic sport, we'd have gold medals in it. But you see,
that's a really good point.
The annoying thing and the frustrating thing for you is that while these 14,000 odd reports are gathering dust on shelves around the All Ireland or in the Department of Health, people are dying, and it's affecting real people.
Absolutely. But to me, what is worse, and I'm so probably obsessive about it at the moment, is about our children who are trying to access mental health services. Some could be waiting up until 4 to 6 years. These are children who possibly could be on the autism spectrum, who cannot, at the most crucial time of their life, cannot be assessed. And so I don't know if you know this, I became chairperson of the very first mental health committee, joined your office mental health committee there a few months ago. And I'm hoping and I'm guiding this committee into see that the most important thing we can do now in this term of office is to ensure accountability. How is the HSE spending the money? Down to the last penny. Why is there a poor uptake on recruitment where services are actually closed down because they don't have lead psychiatrists? You know, why is a child going, you know, from the GP's room straight to a psychiatrist in the CAM service when all they need is probably a little bit of talking therapy? There's so many unanswered questions. And nothing is going to change unless somebody in the government, in the Department of Health, focuses on these issues. So I'm just hoping that this committee that I'm in will start making people a little bit uncomfortable. The sad thing, though, is that when I finish, and the chances are I won't ever be back again because it was a nomination, I'm just wondering who's going to take up the baton. Because if we don't answer this, child psychiatry is going to be dead in a few years.
And John, you're not painting a pretty picture there, but I mean, if, as somebody like who does what I do, it doesn't surprise me to hear back from you what you're saying, because I have experienced that type of frustration from several different people who have entered the realms of politics, and they just reckon it's like, if you'll pardon the pun, and it's made me a grave one, it's like banging your head against a stone wall. You know, there's a system there, and if you're not at the centre and within that system, it doesn't work. If you're outside trying to change it and trying to get things moving, and as your case, trying to get moving and trying to get answers, the system militates against you. And that is not exactly... We'll move on to something a bit more that I really want to talk about, Joan. Solace House, can you tell us about that, please?
So a few years ago, I was contacted by a young woman from Waterford, Rebecca Scott, her name is, and she wanted to bring the walk, the Darkness and Tonight walk, to New York. So she worked for the New York Irish Centre. So conversation with her boss, the director, Paul Finnegan, led into what about bringing the service, a service to New York. And of course, you know, I said that I'm usually a positive person. I thought, yeah, sure, that's no problem. And it's been the most difficult 2 years of my life, because you're dealing with 8.5 million people of different nationalities. You know, there's no sense of community like there is in Ireland. No matter where you go, there's always a sense of community. But there isn't, because there's far too many communities. So what happened was the New York Irish Centre gave me a few rooms to operate a service again for those who are suicidal or self-harming. And as I said, it was the most difficult thing to do, because first of all, I had to look for funding. And I'm talking about, as usual, we go to our Irish, poor old Irish people in New York, the same people who are used over and over again, looking for them to fund this. And that's really what happened. So now it's got to a point where we are hoping to open another centre in the Bronx. So we have one in Queens, and then we have one in the Bronx. And it's not just for the Irish. Last year, I think only 47% of all people who came to us were Irish. So that was 53% who were not Irish. But the other thing that we discovered was that, you know, there were two groups of people, one the undocumented, and the other were, and obviously had no health insurance. That's why the service is vital that it's free. And the other group of people were Americans who couldn't afford health insurance. So we certainly are in a position where we can help and where we are helping. So we're 2 years, nearly 3 years old now. And so I've been going over, certainly in the last 2 years, year and a half, every month for a few days, always with the begging bowl to try to make this service viable, and also trying to increase the walks around America so that eventually, hopefully, this organisation will be self-sufficient.
And Joan, can I just ask you, like, I'm old enough to remember, and I think I left school in 1977 or 78, so I'm old enough to remember a lot of the guys and girls that I went to school with had to leave this country back in 1982. And as you know, boom bust is cyclical in this country. So you will have big cohorts leaving at certain times to go all over the world because there's nothing here for them at particular times. We're only after seeing it from, what, 2008 to very recently again in this country. What's the age demographic of the Irish that you're meeting in New York that have these problems now? Are they all age groups, or would they be in
the people of that era? They're all age groups, basically. You know, the reality, too, is that the remit of the New York Irish Centre, in fact, all Irish immigration centres across America, will be very different than it was 30 years ago. You know, 55,000 people came over in the 80s to America. And you would have, the first thing you would have done was probably connecting to the nearest Irish whatever, whether it's the Irish pub or the Irish immigrant centre. The young people don't do that anymore. And it hasn't quite changed with the times. So what you're seeing is really, it's, you know, as I said, it's all nationalities, and that's the way it should be marketed. You know, suicide prevention and intervention isn't just for the Irish. And in fact, in fairness to all the Irish people who have donated and supported Solace House, each one of them has said, I'm doing this because it's not for the Irish only. It is for the people of this country who gave them their home and many of them their wealth. And this is their way of feeling that they're giving back a bit to that country.
Joan, among the, as you call them, undocumented Irish, do you think that, and I don't want to politicise this now, but have you seen a spike in the demand for the services in Solace House since Mr. Trump took office?
No, it was always there. You know, being undocumented has always been a worry, a constant worry for the Irish, I'm sure for every nationality. But I believe that in Boston there has been a spike. That, you know, men and women, Irish men and women, who set up homes, set up their maybe business or work, which they can do, but are terrified to drive in the same car together, especially those who have children, because they could be deported if anything happens, if they have a broken tail light, whatever. So I am aware of that, certainly in Boston and in Washington. But New York, because it's so teeming with so many nationalities and it's so big, you can slip under the radar, you know. So what we have become is, you know, when you think about people coming over to America, even if they had issues before, the issues are still there, but what's worse for them is that they've no support system, they've no family, they can't go home. But what has happened is that Solace House has become their family. And again, that's another important difference between what we have done in Ireland and what we've done in America.
And knowing your past, Joan, and your history and the way you operate, I would imagine, as you have said yourself there, that before too much longer, there could be a Solace House in Boston, there could be in California, there could be in everywhere around America.
Well, we're certainly looking at Philadelphia at the moment for next year and possibly San Francisco. But again, that's, you know, I'm just replicating what happened here. It's the Irish people who are bringing us, who brought us to different parts of the country in Ireland. It's the Irish again who are bringing us to different parts of the country in America.
Joan, do you ever get physically and mentally tired? Because this seems to be never ending. And I mean, and I'm a culprit as well, because everybody's pulling out of you for a bit of your time. Do you ever get just, oh God, I wish I could just stay in bed today and do nothing?
Oh God, I do that. But no matter what, I think everybody feels that, don't they? That they can have a duvet a day or something. But you know, during the snow, I did absolutely nothing for 3 or 4 days except eat and drink and look, binge watch, you know, Netflix. And it was horrendous. It really was. There was no purpose to the day, even though it was such a lovely excuse. The snow was a grand excuse to eat and drink and everything. But it was so unproductive. And we all need a purpose to our day, regardless whether it's just to feed the cat or walk the dog. We need a purpose to our day. This happens to be my purpose, and it's what gives me the energy and drive, is when I see that we are helping people. And I think that's such a reward, you know, for me, that I don't think I'll ever get tired doing it, to be honest.
Well, Joan, I think that's a perfect way to close our chat this morning. I want to thank you so much for joining me on Northside today. Independent Senator and campaigner for mental rights issues in Ireland and now probably throughout the world, Senator Joan Freeman, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Not at all, Johnny. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
God bless you, Joan. Thank you.
Yeah.